This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Every week at this time, we talk election integrity, election protection on this program. Got a blockbuster for you today. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with us as usual. And joining us in a moment, lead attorney in Ohio, Cliff Arnebeck. And you're welcome to call in with questions or comments at 888-5-PETER-B.
And now this word from our sponsor. Have you lost your appetite for politics? Not interested in big elections? Do you feel ambivalent every 4 years? You may be suffering from electile dysfunction. From the leading maker of voter enhancement drugs, try new Votegra. You'll be back in the booth in no time. And your Chad won't be dangling.
Just last week, Brad Friedman graced us in studio. He's back at the Brad Blog World headquarters, and you can see his updates at bradblog.com. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
Not too bad today. And, of course, last week we were graced with the presence of Richard Hayes Phillips, who is just winding up his West Coast speaking tour. You can get details on his book, order the book, and find out where he's speaking at witnesstoacrime.com. And it's that crime that drives our discussion the first half hour today, as we're joined by Ohio attorney Cliff Arnebeck, who has been working on the case that we discussed with Richard last week, and there have been some important developments. Cliff, thanks for joining us on the show tonight.
Nice to be with you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in election lawyering.
Well, I used to do some legal work for the Ohio Senate Republican Campaign Committee, and in that capacity managed some fairly serious election litigation. But in 2000, there was this incredible attack on one of the justices, the Democratic justices on the Ohio Supreme Court. And I jumped into that battle, and it was against the Chamber of Commerce. And that led right into the contesting the 2004 presidential election. And what's happened recently is we've figured out how all this ties together, and that it really started with Karl Rove's strategy of pulling out the stops and using illegal corporate money to get George Bush elected and reelected, among other dirty tricks.
And Cliff, give us just a quick sense of your view of the work that Richard Hayes Phillips published in Witness to a Crime.
Well, Richard has been with us from very early in the aftermath of the 2004 election and doing analyses of the voting patterns, and then as things progressed and we actually got access to the ballots, looking at the actual ballots, photographing them, and what he's done in the book Witness to a Crime is create a very comprehensive analysis and a compendium of actual ballots, ballot books, et cetera. And in some cases, because of the destruction of evidence that's occurred, those digital photographs are the only evidence, not just the best evidence, they're the only evidence of some of the material that has been destroyed. So in terms of going into a trial over criminal conduct, even in a civil context, his testimony is going to be extraordinarily important. And the other point that I want to make is that when people destroy evidence, they don't get off scot-free, because there are some rules of law that if you destroy evidence knowing that it is relevant to issues in litigation, there's a presumption created that the reason you destroyed it is it because it would have been adverse to your interests and to the benefit of those who sought the were seeking the evidence. So those who've destroyed the evidence have really created a problem for themselves. And Richard is in the position of having been there seeking this material, and in one case, in a county that destroyed all of their ballots, I had sent a document hold notice to them on the very day that Richard happened to be in their offices making photographs of ballots, and they tried to stop him, which indicates that they had something to hide. They then we get a court order to preserve the ballots. After receiving the court order, they destroyed all their ballots. Hmm. So these folks are going to have a real problem when it comes to time to account to the judge in terms of what they were doing.
Attorney Cliff Arnebeck with us from Columbus, Ohio, on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Brad, you want to ask a few cues?
I do, and I should say I was able to hear Cliff a little bit better right at the beginning, up until he said he was had been working for the Republican Senate in Ohio. I didn't realize that. And so either my hearing went bad after that, or you made some adjustment.
I was getting a little feedback, so I did tweak it a little bit. Sorry, Brad.
I got you. No problem. Before we get into the real ripple that Cliff has been causing this week, just to close the loop here on Richard Hayes Phillips and those ballots that were destroyed, 56 counties out of 88 counties in Ohio who destroyed their ballots after being told not to, or either destroyed or lost or didn't have. What is the case that you're now reigniting out there in Ohio, is that going to deal with those 56 out of 88 counties? Because as I understand, nothing has been done. No accountability has been brought for those missing ballots at this point.
Well, there's accountability in the sense that the Secretary of State, at the point she ordered all the ballots be brought to her offices in Columbus, she required that an explanation be given for anything that was missing. And in some cases, there were misunderstandings of what the obligation was with respect to certain ballots. At least that's what they said. But there are other explanations that are suggestive of disrespect for the law and their legal obligations and, outright defiance of a court order. So that will be dealt with, and even those who try to defend the election as not having been fraudulent in terms of its result have commented that the destruction of evidence is a serious matter and should be dealt with.
Now, Cliff, will that be dealt with by Secretary of State Jennifer Brunner? I did speak with her about this some time ago, and she told me she was very concerned about some of these in some cases, nonsensical excuses for the destruction of the ballots. You know, coffee was spilled on some of them, which is somewhat strange, seeing as how these ballots are supposed to be in a double-locked safe, that they would be brewing coffee in there. But is it going to be Secretary of State who brings accountability here, or will that come through the lawsuit that you are continuing to work on? I know it was Judge Marbley who was the one who is the judge you're dealing with, and I know the judge who gave the order to retain those ballots. So what would be the sort of chain of custody for getting accountability on those from those counties prior to 2008?
Well, I think that's a responsibility that we have as plaintiffs. We're the ones that ask that the material be preserved, and we will discharge our responsibility with, I expect, the Secretary of State being as interested as we are in hearing the follow-up question, the answers to the follow-up questions about what went wrong. The other point I want to make is that we're not interested in making life difficult for people who are sincere in saying that they don't know what happened and they don't understand it. There's one Board of Elections where, you know, they could not find the material, and you could tell that they were genuinely upset about it. What we think is that the very technical folks who have so much control over the computers, in some cases have the same kind of control and access to the ballots. And as they were, to the extent they were involved in the criminal conduct in terms of tampering with ballots. Part of their cover-up would have been, could have been, to destroy part of the hard copy material that would help expose their fraud. So the people, the folks at the boards of elections, this may be another instance where they're sort of in the dark. So we're not after the innocent folks. We're after the real crooks, and we think we know who they are, and we will be talking to them.
Now, Cliff, last week on our program, we revealed the information about Mike Spoonamore, who went public with some comments, and you held a pretty powerful news conference in Columbus about that. And he pointed a finger at Mike Connell, who is described as the IT guy for Karl Rove and the Bush-Cheney team. And I've been following Brad Blog this week, and there's been some pretty explosive reporting here that Mr. Connell may have received threats directly or indirectly from Karl Rove to keep quiet.
That's our understanding. It's not that not to keep quiet. It's to keep quiet about him. We identified Karl Rove as the principal perpetrator of what we believe to be a Ohio Corrupt Practices Act / RICO action or conspiracy. He is the ringleader, and to the best of our knowledge, and what our we've been informed that Rove made threats to Mike Connell to take the rap and not to expose him. And this is a very serious thing. It rises to the level of assuming it's true, our understanding is correct, that Karl Rove's the bad guy. You start throwing your weight around to intimidate a witness, to obstruct justice, to suborn perjury. You're looking at compounding a crime, the underlying crime.
All right. We need to take a break. We'll pick up there, and Brad, I'll let you pick up the questioning regarding Mike Connell after the break. We're talking with Cliff Arnebeck, the attorney in Columbus, Ohio, working on the issues related to the 2004 presidential election. I believe it was stolen, and I'd love to see them prove it in court and see Karl Rove stand for it. If you have a question or comment, we'll try to squeeze it in. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number, 888-573-8372. You can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
We continue with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com and our guest, attorney Cliff Arnebeck from Columbus, Ohio. And just before the break, I raised the name Mike Connell. He is the Republican IT specialist. And we got word this week that Karl Rove has threatened him. And, Brad, why don't you pick up there?
I will. And Connell described most colorfully by Cliff Arnebeck and Bob Vetrakis in an interview that we ran at Brad Blog as the high IQ Forrest Gump. For his uncanny ability to be everywhere, it seems, from Florida 2000 to Ohio 2004. And this fella, in fact, created the firewall for the congressional computer network.
So, and did they give him a box of chocolates?
Oh, yeah, well, he's you never know. I know they gave him quite a bit. He has he's also working on John McCain's campaign right now and worked on the RNC email that was supposedly, well, we don't know what happened to some of this RNC email from Rove. And I know, Cliff, you sent a letter to Mukasey asking him to retain this email. But I wanted to find out, with Connell, the letter you wrote to Mukasey asking for protection for Connell describes him as the fall guy for election fraud in Ohio, according to this the source who says that Rove has threatened him. Now, do you believe he was complicit in the effort to game elections, or just that he happens to know stuff and that they would like him to be the fall guy?
the latter. We view him as a fundamentally a technician and an implementer of things that we want to know a lot about. We view him as an extraordinarily valuable witness because of his multiple roles in all of the things that we think are related to a racketeering type conspiracy. And one of the difficult things about a complicated racketeering case is the complexity itself. And normally you would find all kinds of steps being taken to create separate cells with different people in charge and avoiding linkages. And what they've done in this enterprise is to have one person through a variety of organizations who has a key implementing role in practically every aspect of this. And we're not saying that he's a bad guy. What we're saying is he has been an instrument in these many, many different roles, and he can sort of pull it together and give us information so we can understand how it all ties together and how it operated.
Have you been given any indications yet from him that he is willing, to flip here, to sing, or is this just a hope at this point?
I'm going to say this because I'm sure Karl Rove is aware of it, and that's why he is probably upset. Mr. Connell had indicated affirmatively that he was willing to come in and talk to the House Judiciary Committee about this matter, and they didn't follow up. The staff did not follow up with him, but the fact that he was willing then, we hope, is indicative that he'll be willing now to come forward as a good citizen and help us find the truth, and that's what we're seeking.
And Cliff Arnebeck, how far can this go? Will you be able to depose Karl Rove and other campaign officials, including, say, Ken Blackwell?
Yes, and the neat thing about this, people get, particularly if you watch the hearings, you watch these hearings in Congress and the frustration of a real statesman, John Conyers, and not being able to get Rove to respond to a subpoena, and the sense of courageous Democrats like Mr. Wexler of Florida, mm-hmm. Feeling that no way can you actually complete an impeachment against these people. A racketeering case, a civil RICO case, does not depend upon these limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't depend upon, the President Bush cannot give pardons against civil RICO. So a civil RICO case is very powerful in that it does not depend upon, it can proceed. And, mm-hmm. and the interesting thing is, if you recall the Paula Jones case, which went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the issue was, can you take a deposition of a president during his term of office in a civil case? And the answer was yes.
Yeah.
So we expect that we will be able to take Mr. Rove's deposition and others. And
Cliff, just 30 seconds remaining. What else would you like to add that we haven't asked you about?
Well, I would like to add that I applaud the work that Brad Friedman and people with whom he's associated have been doing on this, working on this since 2004, courageously and with great perseverance, and radio stations like yours, Peter, that have helped keep the search for truth alive. We really appreciate it.
Well, we're doing what we can, and I know you're working hard. Stay on it, Cliff, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks a lot.
Cliff Arnebeck in Columbus, Ohio. Brad Friedman will stay with us, and we'll talk about Ken Blackwell's trip to Capitol Hill this week and the almost impeachment hearing.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
1 week from today at this time, I'll be broadcasting live from Madison, Wisconsin, the scene of the Progressive Radio Conference, Go to nonstopradio.com to get more information.
Interrupting all programs.
The radio keeps on pirate satellite. Orbiting your living room, cashing in the Bill of Rights. Human army surplus or refusing of the life. Radio keeps on pirate satellite.
We continue our election protection hour with Brad Friedman, proprietor, citizen journalist, and chief cook and bottle washer at bradblog.com, where they can always use your help. That is a nonprofit website, so go to bradblog.com if you can help. And if you can help, go to peterbcollins.com and click on the link that says you can help. Ken Blackwell went to Washington this week. Had a few words to say.
Urging voters from the rolls. 30 points down in the polls. Bye, bye, Blackwell. 2004 election fraud. Now just between you and your God. Bye, bye, Blackwell.
Wouldn't it have been nice if Victrola and the Dust Bunnies had been there to play Ken Blackwell out of the House Judiciary Committee, as he was there earlier this week. Brad, tell us what Ken had to say.
Well, it was interesting. Now, remember, Ken Blackwell, as Secretary of State of Ohio, has never sat down in the House Judiciary Committee. They've been trying to get him for quite some time. He snubbed them back in February when they invited him to come and discuss the 04 election, and they had to sort of threaten him with a subpoena. So this time, looks like he decided to show up, and some fireworks indeed were going in the Judiciary Committee yesterday, as they were finally, 4 years later, able to ask this guy about what happened in 2004. You'll be surprised to learn he had all of his lies memorized and ready to go. Deborah, I think the most interesting confrontation really was Debbie Wasserman Schultz from Florida,
right?
Democrat down there, pretty tough gal. She was relentless, I will say, on him, trying to get an answer out of him about these thousands of registration forms that he did not accept because they weren't on the proper weighted paper.
Right.
Call that nightmare, where he threw out these paper, registrations if they didn't come in on 18-pound paper or whatever the heck it was back there.
I remember, yeah.
He gave some excuse for why he had to do that. He claimed that it was because they had previously found that if the paper weight wasn't heavy enough, that these forms would get lost in the mail. The post office couldn't properly handle them. Though that doesn't really explain why then the ones that he did get, he refused to use. Now, he then went on to say that though those were thrown out, everyone who wanted to register in Ohio was able to, he claims. He gave no evidence for that. And Wasserman Schultz was pretty relentless on him, saying, well, look, was there people who registered, whose registrations were thrown out, who did not get registered after you threw them out? And Blackwell simply wouldn't answer the question. She was not happy with that, and they really went at it for quite a bit. So he was under the gun, but you know, here we are, 4 years later, about 100 days out now from the 2008 election, and really there has been little, if any, accountability brought in Ohio or anywhere else, and
mm-hmm.
We're looking at a lot of the same mess we were looking at in 2004 and in many ways compounded in 2008, and of course not just in Ohio, all over the country.
And Ken Blackwell was there testifying with one of our favorites, Hans von Spakovsky,
yes,
who's the Wernher von Braun of American elections.
Yes,
and
he is.
And it seems like they conspired to kind of spark a backfire and say, oh, look over there, voter fraud, voter fraud, voter fraud, voter fraud.
Well, that's what he was doing, of course. Everyone's favorite Bond villain, Hans von Spakovsky, was really, they were, you know, making the same old claims that if it only weren't for this group Acorn that actually registers millions of low-income voters each year. If it wasn't for Acorn committing voter fraud by signing up people to vote named Donald Duck, Mary Poppins, and Dick Tracy, everything in American democracy would just be fine. I mean, and that's who they were, you know, focusing on, Acorn. Now, what I think can't be repeated enough, since they love to bring out their old straw man, Acorn. Acorn itself actually verifies every registration form that they get. They call the phone numbers on the registration form, and if they can't verify that it's a legitimate registration form, they flag it as possibly fraudulent and then turn it in to the Board of Election that way, because by law they have to turn in a registration form, even if it is from a Donald Duck or a Mary Poppins. So it is, in fact, Acorn who exposes most of this fraud, and yet this is the Republicans' favorite straw man to say that they're trying to commit voter fraud, when in fact there is no actual record of Mary Poppins, Donald Duck, or Dick Tracy ever actually having cast a vote. And that's what, as usual, Von Spakovsky was on about, and just these people are relentless, and they don't give a damn about democracy. Basically, it's about politics for them, and that was very clear yesterday in the Judiciary Committee.
Now, Brad, I'm looking at the end of one of your posts, and it reads: "Sparks began to fly after the recess, working on getting some video. What sparks or fur happened to fly there?"
Well, it was, in fact, first between Wasserman Schultz and Blackwell, and then one of the exchanges with Von Spakovsky, and another one with Blackwell and I think it was Bobby Scott, if I recall, trying to get those videos, want to get them up. It's been very hard to get, though, frankly. I don't know that these were extraordinary hearings. It's the last hearing before the 2008 election concerning elections, and I don't think it even ran on C-SPAN. So I'm having trouble finding it. I had to watch the feed from the Judiciary Committee's webcast, and it was quite amusing because they had the opening statements, and just as Blackwell was about to begin his opening statement, finally he said, "Thank you, Mr. Chair," and the web feed went out. And of course, I'm thinking back to our old friend Mike Connell in Ohio, who set up that system.
So, yeah, when Blackwell says good morning, fade to black.
That's it. I mean, it really did. It was a Blackwell blackout there for the first 20 minutes. Missed his entire opening statement, but was able to get the was able to follow it online thereafter. And I am working on getting some of those videos because I think they were real damn interesting, and I don't think anybody saw them.
Well, Brad, and that's a perfect setup to shift to the other big thing at the Judiciary Committee this week. And frankly, it was a letdown. I started off earlier this week declaring it impeachment week on the Peter B. Collins Show. And as I continued to talk to Elizabeth Holtzman, who testified, Dennis Kucinich, who really was responsible for triggering all this, and people like Bruce Fein, it became clear that the rules really wouldn't permit the kind of hearing that I had expected and thought the American people deserved. And on top of that, we called C-SPAN yesterday and said, "Hey, Judiciary, these hearings on executive power, not impeachment, what channel and what time?" And they said, "Oh, that's easy, C-SPAN 3 at 10 o'clock Eastern." And so I set up my TiVo, and I slept a little in, and then when I went to the TiVo, it was recording the housing hearing with Maxine Waters, who we talked to yesterday. They actually had it on C-SPAN 1, so I missed some of the opening remarks, and actually I missed quite a bit of it. But what I did see was so frustrating, because these ground rules, since it's not technically an impeachment hearing, prohibited anyone from impugning the credibility or the honesty of the president. And that made for a very bizarre presentation.
Let me disagree with you a little bit there.
Disagree a lot. It's more fun.
Okay, I will. You're wrong, Peter. the hearings, 6 hours of them, I was glad to see were in fact on C-SPAN 1, and all 6 hours, and they are repeating all 6 hours tonight. And I got to say, despite the sort of hinky ground rules that they set up, they really didn't last very long. And I think it was pretty clear that George Bush and Cheney and so forth, they were well impugned, I would say, throughout the course of the afternoon. In fact, I had the sense that reality had, if only momentarily or for 6 hours, reality had returned to Washington, D.C. I mean, it was a really, don't know how much you got to watch, but it was a really sobering, interesting, honest discussion. And remember, you had both the Republicans and Democrats there testifying in favor of impeachment, but, you know, they weren't supposed to call it that. But everyone did, including, by the way, the Republicans on the committee, who said right out of the bat, make no mistake, this is an impeachment hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. But you had Bob Barr,
yeah.
You know, the House manager from the Clinton impeachment,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, testifying. You had Bruce Fein, as you mentioned. Some top-notch folks, and it was quite a serious and interesting discussion, and I felt that, and I haven't gotten to speak with any of the members of the Judiciary Committee, but I felt that they were listening with rapt attention, and the questioning period that took place the last couple of hours was really rather interesting, and they seemed to be focusing on some very serious issues. Where it goes from here, I don't know, but it was instructive, it was serious, boy, if I was George W. Bush, I would not be happy about mm-hmm. such a hearing. But
Brad, I appreciate your, and I'm glad, you know, you should always feel free to disagree with me and to correct me. I have a lot of watching to do. I've got TiVo capturing it. Now I know they're going to repeat the whole thing. I'll get it from start to finish and look at it over the weekend. And I'm glad it got better because, I had to leave the house this morning and really only saw the opening comments from the second panel. Bruce Fein was speaking I think for the first time when I had to break away. So I'm encouraged by that. But the bottom line is that the governor is on. I'm talking about a carburetor governor to limit just how fast and how far this whole process can go. Let's take a call from Ione in Monterey. Welcome. You're on the air, Ione.
Yeah, hi, Peter B. It's really wonderful to talk to you. I can't hear you too often because the only way I get you is on my radio in the car.
Oh, okay.
I don't have a radio that brings in that station.
Well, you ought to run over to Radio Shack. They got them for $20.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they'll get you one.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, you haven't reported on something Amy Goodman had, and that was this hate crime in Shenandoah, Pennsylvania. A young man by the name of Louis Ramirez was beaten up by six high school students.
Mm-hmm.
This is about two Monday nights ago. And Amy Goodman had on her program, I think it was yesterday, the day before.
It was on the 24th. I have the web screen up in front of me because when you called, this was the first I've heard of it. And Joshua pulled it up for me, and so I have a little bit of information. You're right.
Yeah.
A 25-year-old Mexican immigrant was beaten by a group of teenagers, and he died.
And they haven't done anything, or we haven't heard anything. I mean, she's the only one that ever said anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else on TV or radio has reported anything.
Yeah, and I read a lot of newspapers. I didn't see anything there. So
right.
Thanks for bringing it to our attention, and I'll look into it further.
Okay. I think it's important because these are the things that they overlook and we never hear about,
mm-hmm.
unless we have somebody like you or Amy Goodman on it.
Okay. Well, we'll look into that. Anything else you want to add?
No, I'm just interested in what happened today in the Judicial Committee. Are they going to have it again? You said a repeat?
C-SPAN 1 will replay the six-hour hearing. Brad, do you happen to know when?
I do, but I don't want to tell people because I'd hate for them to stop listening to you, but they started this hour.
Well,
but
I
they
can't
will be,
hear
but
you anyway because I don't do radio.
The final 5 hours of the hearing, which therefore begins at the top of the hour.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So start rolling your recorder, whatever device you have. Thanks, Ione.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a break and return. A couple of more callers standing by. We'll get to you shortly. And be sure to drop by bradblog.com for the very latest on all the issues we've been discussing here today. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lefty talk you can dance to. 9 minutes in front of the hour. Greetings to our weekend listeners in Missoula, Montana, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington. You're unable to call in, I know that. But you can email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. Or if you take exception to something I say, send it to fullofit@peterbcollins.com. I'll be happy to hear from you either way. Got some callers for you, Brad. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Let's go to Chris and Salinas. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hello. How you doing, Peter?
Pretty good, Chris. Go right ahead. We can hear you.
Okay. I just had a real quick question. Was there any connection between Mike Connell and the Don Siegelman case at all? I just was curious about that.
You know, I don't know if he, if his company dealt with Riley's race down there in 2002. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he has literally been everywhere. He was involved with the Swift boaters. He's got a page on his website that I'm going to link to shortly showing that in 2004 he bragged that every single candidate that his company ran the computer systems for actually won in 2004.
Hmm.
A 1,000% batting average. He's got it up on his website.
Well, and we mentioned last week that he also maintains the websites for Congress.
Yes, he does. He installed the network, the firewall. That means he very well has the password and the back door to Judiciary Committee, Intelligence Committee. You bet. And that's one of the reasons why Arnbeck had met with John Conyers and some folks on, and Dennis Kucinich, as I recall, to discuss those matters, and why it's somewhat beguiling that they agreed to bring in Mike Connell, as Cliff Arnbeck had said in the earlier part of the show, but have yet to meet with him. I don't really understand that, and I'd like to learn more.
Dave and Eureka, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with his Bradness.
Hey, gentlemen. I sat through all 6 hours of it, and I had some observations for you. It was my opinion that we have some really good Democrats that were honestly trying to get the truth out, and we have some Republicans who, in every way that they could, mostly deception, were trying to prevent that from happening. It was an expressed observation of some of the members, including the chairman, that this was probably the most significant, the most important hearing that the Rules Committee had conducted in a long time. Yet I don't think any of the news media found it to be even a little bit newsworthy. But
well, it'll be interesting to see if the networks cover this. I tend to doubt it. They have great powers of looking the other way. Brad, what's your thought?
Yeah, the caller's right. Dave's right. The Conyers ended the hearing by saying these were the most, quote, the most important hearings we've held in the judiciary in this session of Congress. And I concur, although it did leave me scratching my head as to, hey, Mr. Chairman, what the heck took you so long? I'll also note Maurice Hinchey, who actually testified as a witness at the hearing, said this is the most impeachable administration in the history of this nation. These are pretty strong comments from some pretty high-ranking congressmen. Whether you agree with them or not, you would think it would be notable to the media that they would want to pick it up and report on this. I don't know how the coverage has been so far. I've been buried in a bunch of things here. But, I thought they were pretty incredible hearings, and I can only hope that people are out there paying attention on their own if the media is more interested in, Obama in Berlin and McCain at the sausage factory or wherever the heck he was.
Well, he was in the bologna section the other day. I love that photo offsite.
There you go.
Let's talk to Bob in Humboldt listening to KGOE. Hello, Bob. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Bob. I can hear you. Go right ahead. Bob's got some hearing issues.
The reference yesterday, you invited commentary on progressive radio for the conference, the forthcoming conference.
That's right. It's a week from today.
Yes. I have my laundry list here, four items. No, first of all, it's increasingly in the public eye, the abuse to farm animals in the fallacy and peril of eating meat. And just today in the newspaper, the Democratic Party endorses a new initiative, state ballot initiative called Room to Roam.
I think that's number two on the ballot, yeah.
So I would like to see some discussion and possibly a guest on the show to fill the public in on the fallacy and peril of eating meat and the mistreatment of animals pursuant to that.
All right, Bob, I'll tell you this. We will cover all of the ballot measures between now and November. And I'm sorry I'm out of time here. I'd get the rest of your laundry list, but I thank you for calling the show today. And, Brad, we have just about a minute remaining. What else important occurred this week that's reported at Brad Blog that people ought to know about?
Well, actually, it caught me off guard there. I was really focusing on this story from Connell. There's going to be much more coming out on this, so I'd urge you to keep your eye on Brad Blog on that. And we will try to get you some material over the weekend from that Blackwell hearing. But, you know, up to Americans, you're going to have to go out and find this stuff yourself. The media ain't going to deliver it to you, but trust me. Check out those impeachment hearings when they re-air on C-SPAN. They may run throughout the weekend as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, will do. And talk about the River Dee.
Oh, the lovely River Dee. Well, you can come and see our journey that we spent throughout the summer down the River Dee. The video is at Brad Blog, and it was a remarkable journey along the way.
That was from the source to the mouth, right?
All the way from the source of the river to the mouth. That we traveled throughout our summer vacation, if you will, over the last few weeks. So check out the people and the places that we visited along the lovely River Dee.
All right, Brad. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, brother. Have a good weekend.
BradBlog.com. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Peter B. Collins Show.
Happy trails to you.
My thanks to producer Katrina Rill and our assistant producer Joshua Emerson Smith. One more time, my email is peter@peterbcollins.com. Use it.
Keep smiling until then.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.